Welcome to this week's Ox Talk for Tuesday the 12th of August, 2025. This week's news items from the local papers were selected and read by Ralph Weirs and Christine Churchill. The copying and the distribution of the USB sticks is by Michelle Lawful, and the technical officer, that's me, is David Field. The Alexa guide at the end of this edition has been updated slightly. Today, sunrise is at 6:15, and sunset is at just after 8:30. And on this day, 1908, the Ford Motor Company builds its first Model T car, which Henry Ford himself first tests on a hunting trip. And in 1981, IBM unveil their first personal computer at New York's Waldorf Hotel, priced at $1,565, 16 kilobytes of RAM. It helps bring computing to the masses. And a birthday, Cecil B. DeMille, filmmaker, 1881.
A 9-year-old musician has been awarded a diploma in piano and had her debut poetry collection published in the same month. Arabella Stell from Oxford began showcasing her creative talents in July 2021, when she held her first solo art exhibition at the Brick Lane Gallery in London at the age of 5. The exhibition featured 45 large-scale oil and acrylic paintings exploring themes of nature, mythology and spirituality. Last month, Arabella published her debut poetry collection, Fly to My Beginning. The collection, written between the ages of 7 and 8, was published by American publisher Width and Stock. It has been endorsed by Stephen Fry, who described her work as enchanting, adding her voice is striking, clear, and individual.
A group of care home residents have enjoyed a boat trip along the River Thames. Waterside Court Care Home in Wallingford took residents on the adventure in partnership with the River Tyne Boat Trust. The trip was planned to coincide with the Henley Royal Regatta, which allowed the group to see the build-up to the event, with rowers gliding past in preparation for their races. The residents were joined by friends and family members on the trip. Clements Herriman, Waterside Court's senior general manager, transported the residents to the river on the home's minibus and said, "It was such a wonderful day. The sun was shining, the water was sparkling, and our residents, families and friends were full of smiles and laughter as we cruised along. I felt very lucky to enjoy this experience alongside the Waterside Court family. We will certainly be back."
A rare first edition of The Hobbit found during a routine house clearance has sold for £43,000. The copy of J.R.R. Tolkien's 1937 work was discovered tucked deep into an old bookcase at a home in Bristol. It is one of only 1,500 copies initially printed in September 1937. Such was its popularity that within weeks all copies had been sold and a second printing was undertaken. The book had come from the family library of Hubert Priestley, a famous botanist in the 1930s, and brother to Antarctic explorer and geologist Sir Raymond Edward Priestley. Mr. Priestley had strong connections to the University of Oxford, where Tolkien was the Rawlinson and Bosworth Professor of Anglo-Saxon and a Fellow of Pembroke College. Both shared mutual correspondence with fellow author C.S. Lewis, and it is likely that both men knew each other. It's the connection to Tolkien and the important provenance that makes this book so special. It's not just any first edition. It belonged to someone who very likely called Tolkien an acquaintance, says book specialist Caitlin Riley from Auctioneum Limited. The surviving books from the initial print run are now considered some of the most sought after in modern literature. It was expected to fetch £10,000, but sold for £43,000 at auction after hundreds of bidders had signed up from all over the world. The lucky bidder was a private collector based in the UK. Ms. Riley said nobody knew it was there. It was just a run-of-the-mill bookcase containing the usual reading and reference books you'd expect to find. It was clearly an early Hobbit at first glance, so I just pulled it out and began to flick through it, never expecting it to be a true first edition. Ms. Riley added, I couldn't believe my eyes. There are a few key details to look out for when spotting one of the first editions, and as I looked into each one, they were all there. When I realised what it was, my heart began pounding. It's an unimaginably rare find. First edition, first impressions of The Hobbit rarely come up for auction. Out of the 1,500 printed, only a few hundred are believed to still remain. The amount of interest in this special book has been monumental, says Ms. Riley. Within days of it going online, we'd attracted interest from America, Canada, Norway and Australia. It's been a whirlwind couple of weeks. This result is phenomenal. It has surpassed every expectation and sets a new bar for early first editions.
More than 9,000 people have backed a petition against a proposed Oxford congestion charge. A six-week consultation on the Oxfordshire County Council proposal for the city centre road fee has come to an end. It could lead the way to the full approval of a £5 daily charge for motorists. Roads affected include Hythe Bridge Street, St Cross Road, Thames Street and St Clement Street, every day from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Marston Ferry Road and Hollow Way will be affected Monday to Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Changes could be introduced as early as the autumn, according to the County Council. A number of permits and exemptions would apply, including for blue badge holders and emergency vehicles. Residents within the Oxford permit area, which covers the city and surrounding areas, will be able to apply for up to 100 permits in a year. Oxfordshire County Council's Lib Dem administration says the reasoning for congestion charge is to reduce traffic, make bus journeys faster and more reliable, as well as reducing air pollution. However, the City Council released its annual air quality report for 2024, which showed that air pollution levels had reduced by 10% year on year. Jack Cousins, head of roads policy at the AA, said locals need assurances the scheme will end within 2 years, as there have been too many times when charges that are supposedly temporary are kept because they become too lucrative. Electric cars will not be exempt from the daily fee, as the scheme's purpose would be to reduce traffic by reducing the number of car journeys, according to the local authority. The council said income generated by the congestion charge would be used to cover the cost of setting up and operating the system, with any additional money going towards discounted park and ride services and improved bus services. The congestion charge would remain until the introduction of a traffic filtering trial once Botley Road reopens, which is expected to be in August 2026. Andrew Gant, Cabinet Member for Transport Management, said, "We believe the proposed temporary congestion charge could have a significant positive impact on people's travel in and around the city by strengthening local bus services and reducing overall traffic. It's our response to calls for urgent improvement from bus companies and others. I'd like to encourage residents to read through our proposal and tell us about how it might make a difference to them. I'm very keen to understand the impact of the scheme and also to see feedback on some of the details being outlined." Annalise Dodds, MP for Oxford East, is urging people to have their say. Posting on Blue Sky, she said, "Time's running out to have your say on the Oxford congestion charge proposals. I really hope the County Council is going to listen to what local people are saying on this."
One of the rarest and most significant tapestries is on display at Blenheim Palace for the first time in more than 100 years. The Battle of Arbela is available for public viewing in the Great Hall at the Woodstock Stately Home between August the 5th and 26th. It is part of the historic Story of Alexander the Great series, which was commissioned by the first Duke of Marlborough in 1707 and woven by the renowned Judocus de Vos after designs by Charles Le Brun. The series originally depicted various scenes from the life of Alexander the Great and his military triumphs. Alexander was a popular theme at the time, as no victor in world history had left a legacy comparable to his. The Battle of Arbela was a turning point in history, marking Alexander the Great's decisive victory over the Persian Empire. This solidified his place as a military genius and one of history's greatest military strategists. Carmen Alvarez, Collections and Conservation Manager at Blenheim Palace, said, "This tapestry hasn't been seen for more than a century, according to our records, so it's a privilege to bring it back into the spotlight, and we highly recommend that visitors come and see it while on display."
A Wantage band has performed at the opening of a British sporting festival at Blenheim Palace. The 48th edition of the British Transplant Games opened at the birthplace of Sir Winston Churchill in Woodstock on Thursday, July the 31st. According to the organisers, the Games bring together the entire transplant community and is an inspiring and life-affirming event. Held from July the 31st to August the 3rd, it saw a range of sporting events, including athletics, darts, golf and tennis. Venues included Blenheim Palace, Whitehorse Leisure Centre in Abingdon and RAF Weston-on-the-Green. At the opening ceremony last week, the Wantage Silver Band performed in what is described as a privilege. A registered charity dedicated to education in music and performance since 1972, it includes more than 200 music makers, patrons, friends and supporters in Oxfordshire. The band's next event is at Wantage's Marketplace at 2 p.m. on September the 7th.
Bookings are now being accepted for Oxford's Westgate Shopping Centre's latest restaurant. Burger lovers are being invited to try out the Beefy Boys during its soft launch between September the 8th and October the 3rd. Those who book a table will get an exclusive chance to experience the Beefy Boys' award-winning menu with a 20% discount on food in exchange for honest feedback on their food, service and their overall experience. The soft launch and burger testers discount will be available for pre-bookings only. Co-founder Anthony Murph Murphy said, "We're absolutely buzzing to be opening in Oxford and we want everything to be perfect for the launch. That's why we're inviting local burger lovers to come and help us fine-tune the experience. In return for your honest feedback, you'll be the first in Oxford to try our award-winning burgers and bag 20% off your food bill." A West Oxfordshire farmer has bought a village pub in the hope of turning it around. Robert Crocker, 70, a farmer from Freeland, has taken on the Hand and Shears in Church Hanborough and hopes it can once again bring together the village. The farmer joked, "You can't make any money out of farming and you can't make any money out of running a pub. So I thought, well, they're both pretty negative and my science tells me that two negatives make a positive." About 15 years ago, the village shop closed in Freeland, the village hall was falling down, the pub was on its knees, and I was part of the group that sort of turned the thing around. Now we've got a beautiful village hall and a thriving pub. We haven't got a shop anymore, but there's one just up the road in the next village. He said the pub was the village's heart and soul just 2 years ago, but COVID, the war in Ukraine, and a rise in utility prices meant the stars didn't align for the previous owner. Dating back to 1775, the Hand and Shears was run by Patrick Moore and his partner Sally until August 2023 when they left due to rising costs. "It's still very early days for the pub's new future," Mr. Crocker said, "but his vision is for a simple country pub. Too many pubs have massive menus, but in reality you just know there is a big freezer full of food in the back and the food goes ping," he said. "In time, we intend to grow as much food on the farm as is practical to give a part homegrown menu. Mr. Crocker added, "We wish to thank the many supporters of the Hand and Shears for their enthusiasm and encouragement. Although the refurbishment is not going to be a quick process, we will endeavour to have the lights on, the bar and cellar well stocked to welcome you back as soon as it is feasibly possible." Liam Walker, a councillor who campaigned for the pub's reopening, said, "This really is brilliant news for the local community, and I'm so pleased that Rob has stepped in to keep the pub open. All too often, we read about another pub closing down, but for the Hand and Shears, the community were very keen to keep it open. Pubs are an integral part of our towns and villages, and I look forward to seeing the doors back open to enjoy a pint in there, hopefully very soon." A new annual festival has been given the go-ahead for an Oxford park. The three-day-long event in Cutteslow Park features tribute acts imitating Taylor Swift, Dolly Parton and Post Malone. There will be three different themed festivals for each day, with Campfire Country on Friday, Beatmasters on Saturday, which is 1990s and 2000s themed and restricted to over 18s, and We Love It on Sunday. Oxford City Council's Licensing Committee decided to approve the new event subject to conditions at their meeting on August the 6th. The applicant told the meeting that organisers had sold 2,098 tickets for Friday, 700 for Saturday and 650 for Sunday. They added that they expected 2,500 people to attend on Friday, 1,000 on Saturday and 800 on Sunday. Four local people objected to the plans in the online application. One said, "This park is surrounded by small family homes with many young children who will not want to be kept awake late at night with live or recorded music, noise pollution for everyone. We aren't privileged enough to escape elsewhere during the 3 days' onslaught of crowds, their behaviour exacerbated by consumption of alcohol." Thames Valley Police did not object to the scheme but raised concerns about the short notice of the application and about the significant increase in use of the park for festivals given the proximity of local residents. The committee decided to grant the licence under the condition that the organisers stop selling alcohol at 9:30 p.m, half an hour before the event closes, and that there will only be one stage and that it would face away from homes, and that there should be one member of security staff for every 100 festival goers at all times. This year's Oxford event is from August the 22nd to 24th.
Gary Rowett has hinted at what areas of the pitch Oxford United will be looking to strengthen next in the summer transfer window. The Ewes have so far added four players this summer in the form of right-back Brody Spencer, midfielders Brian de Kirschmaker and Luke Harris, and striker Nick Prelich. Spencer and de Kirschmaker joined for undisclosed fees from Huddersfield Town and Heracles Almelo, respectively, while Harris switched from Fulham on a season-long loan. Latest arrival Prelech joined United from Serie A side Cagliari on loan with an option to buy clause. The Ewes are arguably lightest now in midfield and out wide. De Kirschmaker, Cameron Brannigan and Will Volks will battle for the spots in the regular two-man midfield, while Fulham loanee Harris and Louis Sibley can play further forward in midfield. Siriki Dembele, Tyler Goodrum, Stan Mills, Matt Phillips and Brezhislav Plasteta are the current options on the wing, with Owen Dale seemingly having no future at the club. The 26-year-old joined from Blackpool for an undisclosed fee on the January deadline day in 2024 and played a key role as United won promotion to Sky Bet Championship via the playoffs. Dale, though, hasn't featured at all for the Ewes in pre-season and spent the second half of the previous campaign on loan at League One side Wigan Athletic. Asked by this newspaper whether reinforcements in midfield and out wide would be the next key areas for recruitment, United head coach Rowett responded, "It would be fair to say whether that's what we're going to do or not is a completely different matter. I still think there are areas of the pitch we haven't quite got the balance we want. Missing Kieran Brown means we haven't got a left-sided centre-back that we can naturally play out that side a little bit more. We've got players in there who have done really well and we will be comfortable in there. I think in midfield we've got three players in there. Again, that might be an area where we haven't got it. Bodies in an area doesn't necessarily mean that we can't improve that area as well, so that's what the championship is about. We don't want to stand still, we want to keep increasing the competition within the group, and people have to step up. If they don't step up, then ultimately it is what it is. That's the division. We want to be ultra competitive this year, which means we have to keep trying to improve." An award-winning social enterprise based on wood recycling is celebrating its 20th year as it launches an appeal to fund future projects. Oxford Wood Recycling is a social enterprise and charity which collects wood destined to go to waste to reclaim and recycle it. Although the organisation is almost self-supporting through its Abingdon Wood Shop in Suffolk Way, the team has said it needs some extra help amid a tough year for charities. A spokesperson said, "Unusually for a charity, we are more than 90% funded from trading, of which we are immensely proud, but with increasing costs and the desire to do more for our community through workshops, courses and our Wood to Work programme, we need to seek alternative funding for these projects. With this in mind, to recognise our 20th anniversary and as a lasting legacy, we have launched a GoFundMe with a goal of raising £20,000 in the next 20 months. As our founder Richard says, sometimes we just need a little help from our friends." The organisation was founded in humble beginnings by Richard Snow, Nick Dowling and Helen Porter in 2005, who met during a postgraduate forestry degree at Oxford University. Their initial goal was to address the wasteful attitude towards wood products in the UK by providing alternative waste management solutions, but has since grown into a fully fledged charity. Now, Oxford Wood Recycling supports people to get jobs, reclaims more than 400 tonnes of timber every year, and has launched a community shed to combat isolation.
A man has been remanded in custody over his alleged involvement in a demonstration that saw aircraft damaged at RAF Brize Norton. Mohammed Umar Khalid, 22, is charged with conspiracy to commit criminal damage and conspiracy to enter a prohibited place knowingly for purposes prejudicial to the safety or interests of the United Kingdom. Two Voyager planes suffered £7 million worth of damage from the action, which was claimed by the group Palestine Action at the RAF base in Oxfordshire on June the 20th. The government subsequently moved to proscribe the group under anti-terror laws. Two jet engines, one on each Voyager aircraft, had to be replaced following the incident at a cost of £2.5 million per engine, the court heard. Fire extinguishers marked with the words Palestine Action and Palestinian flags were recovered at the scene. The court heard Khalid was a British citizen who was born in Manchester. He was arrested at an address in Bedford. The defendant of Stockport Greater Manchester was denied bail and remanded in custody ahead of his next appearance at the Old Bailey on August the 22nd. Khalid made a gesture to a group of friends and family sitting in a busy public gallery as he was led away from the dock, with some blowing kisses back in response. The group could then be heard chanting and waving Palestinian flags outside the court after the hearing had ended. Khalid is the fifth person to be charged in connection with the incident. They will next appear together at the Old Bailey for a plea hearing on January the 16th next year, with a provisional trial date set for January the 18th, 2027. RAF Bryce Norton is the largest station of the Royal Air Force, having been built in 1935. The base has approximately 5,800 service personnel, 300 civilian staff, and 1,200 contractors. The station is home to the RAF's Air Mobility Force, encompassing strategic and tactical air transport and air-to-air refueling forces, as well as being host to many lodger and reserve units.
Thames Valley Police has launched a new recruitment drive seeking individuals ready to make a difference. The force is calling for those interested in more than just a job to consider joining as police officers. This latest campaign is part of ongoing efforts from the force to bolster its ranks and to continue its mission of building trust, fighting crime, and serving victims. The recruitment drive is open to individuals who want to help others, serve their communities, and bring diverse perspectives to the force. The campaign is not limited to those with previous experience in law enforcement, as Thames Valley Police is offering tailored entry routes for candidates. People can also apply regardless of whether or not they have a degree. The force is also keen to highlight the opportunities for career progression within the organisation. After completing initial training in incident and crime response, officers can specialise in a variety of areas, including detective roles, firearms, dog handling, counter-terrorism, and drone operations. The starting salary for new recruits is £32,970, including the South East allowance, with the potential for earnings to exceed £50,000 by the seventh year of service. The force is also emphasising the job stability and meaningful benefits that come with a policing career, especially in the current economic climate. A spokesperson for Thames Valley Police said, "We know policing isn't for everyone. It demands resilience, integrity, and a deep commitment to public service. But for those who answer the call, it's a career like no other. One where you can make a real impact every single day." In addition to the financial and career benefits, the force is also highlighting the variety and sometimes excitement that comes with the role. The recruitment campaign is part of Thames Valley Police's ongoing efforts to ensure it has the right people in place to serve and protect their communities. The force is also keen to build relationships within the community and pursue justice for victims. Interested individuals are being directed to the Thames Valley Police Careers website to explore their entry routes and start their application process. For those who prefer to speak to someone in person, the force's neighbourhood and recruitment teams will be holding recruitment events throughout the summer. These events will provide an opportunity for prospective candidates to learn more about the role and ask any questions they may have. The force is encouraging anyone interested in a career that offers a chance to make a real difference to consider applying. New data has revealed alumni from Oxford University win the most literary prizes of any other university, with graduate winners including authors Sir Philip Pullman and Naomi Alderman. The Selected British Literary Prizes dataset, published this year, compiled information on the winners and shortlisted authors of 9 major British literary prizes over the last 32 years. It revealed Oxford University produced 12% of the 682 writers recognised in an award from 1990 to 2022, almost double that of the runner-up, the University of Cambridge. Oxford produced a total of 116 prize shortlisters and winners, with 55 of those named the winner of the prize. Included in the long list of accomplished graduates of the university are Naomi Alderman, who won the Women's Prize for Fiction for her novel The Power, and Oxford resident Philip Pullman, who won two awards for the final instalment in his Dark Material series, The Amber Spyglass. Various Oxford authors were named multiple times among the winners and shortlisters, with the 116 alumni prize recognitions being shared among 77 authors. Writer Julian Barnes won the Man Booker Prize for his novel The Sense of an Ending in 2011, having been shortlisted twice previously in 1999 and 2005, while Rachel Cusk similarly appeared on the list three times between 1993 and 2015. Established mystery and thriller writer Mick Herron was listed five times between 2013 and 2020, while Matthew Neal's The English Passengers and Hilary Sperling's Matisse the Master both won three prizes each in 2000 and 2005 respectively. Poet and novelist Sir Andrew Motion, who served as Poet Laureate from 1999 to 2009, has won three of the literary prizes for poetry and one for his biography of Philip Larkin, a fellow author and Oxford alumnus. The study, authored by Catherine Binhammer, Kanika Batra, Teo Gray, and Mary C. Jayasuriya, is part of the ongoing Orlando Project, research on feminist scholarship, published by the Cambridge University Press. It includes those named by nine prizes, chosen based on their prestige, longevity, and an eye towards a generic representation of various kinds of fiction, poetry, drama, and non-fiction. These are the James Tate Black Memorial Prize, Costa Book Award, the Booker Prize, Women's Prize for Fiction, the Gold Dagger Award, the British Science Fiction Association Award, the T.S. Eliot Prize for Poetry, the Ted Hughes Award for New Work in Poetry, and the Bailey Gifford Prize for Non-Fiction. After Oxford, the University of Cambridge ranks second in the number of names included in the 30-year list, with the likes of Ted Hughes and Stuart Douglas included in its ranks.
Profits at BMW's manufacturing division have slumped by around 25% as production numbers fall further. Accounts for BMW UK Manufacturing Limited show pre-tax profits fell year on year from £120 million in 2023 to £90 million for the calendar year ending 2024. The accounts show that in the same period, 110,939 cars were made last year, compared with 185,400 in 2023, a decrease in production of 40%. BMW UK Manufacturing Limited operates the Mini plant in Oxford and employs 3,700 people from the site in Horsepath Road. Adding tax contributions to the profit, it takes a total profit for the year 2024 down to £66 million. The report, signed off by BMW's Director of Finance Ramona De Niel from Germany, said the company continually refines its approach in light of changing customer demands. Earlier this year, BMW announced it would freeze a £600 million investment to electrify the Mini plant due to slower than expected sales of electric cars. It also said it would axe 180 jobs at the Cowley-based plant, employed as agency workers. But overall production at the Oxford Mini plant has been running under capacity for the past 5 years. Ms. De Niel said, at present, no risks have been identified which could threaten the existence of the company or which could have a materially adverse impact on the net assets, financial position, or results of operations of the company.
Richard Hammond is launching his new gin in the county, which he has described as better than anything produced by his former co-star, Jeremy Clarkson. The former Top Gear and Grand Tour star is coming to Blenheim Palace in Woodstock for Salon Privé this month. Richard spoke with this newspaper in an exclusive chat ahead of the event, which takes place from August the 27th to the 31st. Salon Privé creates a great atmosphere, said Mr. Hammond. It's a lovely party atmosphere, which isn't crazy or in your face, even if some of the cars are. It's a really lovely arena in which to see fabulous examples of the machines that have been in our lives and given us opportunities for expression, and to tell the world something about ourselves for decades, so it's a fabulous place. During the conversation, the 55-year-old revealed his new gin will be launched at the event and quipped about launching it in Clarkson's County. His Top Gear and Grand Tour co-star Jeremy Clarkson owns a pub and a farm in Oxfordshire. Serving his Hawkstone brand of alcohol at the venues, bottles of Diddley Squat Farm gin can also be purchased. Mr. Hammond believes his new gin, Ratio London Dry Gin, is better than Mr. Clarkson's, and aimed a cheeky dig at their differing processes. I'll be there with the smallest cog, my classic car restoration business, and I'm also launching my rather spectacular new gin on the Thursday, he said. We are hard launching that, and it's quite nice to do that in Clarkson's County. Mine's a lot better, mostly because I drink the stuff, which does help, so there are plenty of reasons to come to the show. Come see us and try my gin. We'll have a load of cars there that we've worked on and done, and beyond that, there will be some spectacular things to see that you really won't see in many other places. His Ratio London Dry Gin and Iron Ridge, a single malt English whisky, were both developed at Hawk Ridge's Berkshire Distillery. James Gurney, founder of Hawk Ridge Distillers, previously said, "Working with Richard has been a meeting of minds. His obsession with quality and storytelling aligns perfectly with our distilling ethos. This isn't about putting a name on a bottle. It's about building a narrative, crafting flavour and doing something remarkable." Salon Privé turns 20 years old this year and will see an array of classic cars, fine dining and high-end brands come to Woodstock's Blenheim Palace. Oxford University student and Harry Potter star Emma Watson has bought a new 9-bedroom mansion in the city. The Hollywood actress is well known for her iconic role as Hermione Granger in all 8 of the Wizarding World's films. After turning her attention to studies, she opted to study a master's degree in creative writing at the University of Oxford in September 2023. It was announced in February that the actress had switched to a DPhil, which is Oxford's version of a PhD. She had previously studied at Headington School and the Dragon School in Oxford. Now she has decided to make the city her home once more, purchasing a multi-million pound mansion in the Jericho area. According to reports over the weekend, the Bolt Hole has 9 bedrooms, as well as a sauna and a jacuzzi. The Daily Mail has photographed a flag featuring the Peanuts character Snoopy, which is being flown outside the reported property. Ms. Watson made headlines this month after being banned from driving following a 4th speeding offence in 2 years. The 35-year-old was caught travelling on Banbury Road, Oxford, at 38 miles an hour in a 30 miles per hour zone. She was also ordered to pay a £650 fine, reduced due to her guilty plea, court costs of £120, and a £264 surcharge. The sentencing occurred on Wednesday, July the 16th, at High Wycombe Magistrates Court.
A groundbreaking cultural centre in Oxford is nearing completion. The Stephen A. Schwarzman Centre is being built as part of the Oxford University's Radcliffe Observatory Quarter in Woodstock Road, where construction began in October last year. It promises to become a hub for the city's culture scene, a huge centre for the university's humanities studies, and a state-of-the-art exhibition and performance space. The aim is to offer benefits to both town and Gown in a unifying project. Activities applied for include the supply of alcohol and late-night refreshment, putting on plays, dance performances and film, and live and recorded music played both indoors and outdoors. The building will bring together 7 of the university's faculties, the Oxford Internet Institute, and a new humanities library. It will also provide a home for Oxford's new Institute for Ethics in AI to lead the study of the ethical implications of artificial intelligence. The building was made possible by a £185 million from philanthropist Stephen A. Schwartzman.
Abingdon traditional Morris dancers brought joy and smiles to the faces of people living in the town over the weekend. The group were in the marketplace on Saturday in their traditional outfits. After dancing in the town centre, the group is now looking forward to Abingdon's Heritage Day in September. The group will also be performing at Wadstock on Saturday, August the 16th, at the Wootton and Dry Sanford Village Fete. In April, one of their members, Duncan Bascaran Brown, a former town mayor, completed an 11-hour dancing marathon in Abingdon Marketplace. He succeeded in his attempt to break the world record for the longest Morris dancing session, and his bid will now be verified by Guinness World Records.
Oxford United's plans for a new stadium have been recommended for approval. The U's are looking to build a 16,000-capacity ground at the Triangle south of Kidlington roundabout, and it has now been confirmed that the application will be heard by Chirwell District Council's Planning Committee on August the 14th. If the Planning Committee agrees with the recommendations of the report, then the application will be referred to the Secretary of State. The report states, the relocation of OUFC is rooted in the need to find an alternative site in the absence of any other feasible, practical or realistic alternatives to accommodate a proposed stadium, and in order to improve its viability as a business operation and maintain its socio-economic contribution to the area. In addition to secure the long-term prospects of OUFC, the club is in need of financial self-sufficiency that the existing location does not and will not provide. The applicants have undertaken a robust assessment of alternatives and have concluded that there are no alternative sites suitable for this proposal. The assumptions made in respect of site availability, landscape and visual harm have been challenged and scrutinised by officers and independent consultants, and there is no reason to disagree with the conclusions therein. The proposed stadium represents a significant upgrade to the existing facilities at the Kassam Stadium, which provides greater opportunities for women's and youth games. The alleged community benefits, including year-round access to the stadium's inclusive community facilities, which could be used by local sports groups and the wider community, support for local sporting facilities, limited free access to facilities by local schools, hosting of local community events, and the potential for education provision on site, must be tempered by the fact that the club is a private entity and public use is not automatic or legally required. Several community benefits are not dependent on the development of this specific site. For example, the Oxford United and the community programmes, whilst beneficial and which provide a valuable contribution to the development of sport in underrepresented areas, are not location-specific and continue to make these contributions regardless of where the team plays. However, should the club cease to exist without a new home stadium, these community benefits may also cease. Similarly, the proposed conference facilities are primarily commercial in nature and not demonstrably community amenities.
An archive centre is recognised for its excellence in preserving and managing historical records. The Oxfordshire History Centre at St Luke's Church in Cowley and run by Oxfordshire County Council has once again achieved accredited status, a national quality standard that recognises high performance in archive service delivery. The accreditation is awarded by the UK Archive Services Accreditation Committee, which assesses archive services every 3 years on organisational health, collections management, access, storage, and collaboration with stakeholders. The panel commended the History Centre for its progress, including a commitment to new storage facilities, the introduction of a dedicated heritage service plan, and the development and expansion of Heritage Search, an online catalogue of Oxfordshire's heritage resources. The centre, which houses the three main collections and archives in Oxfordshire, also earned praise for its alignment with council priorities, focusing on accessibility, engagement, collection development, sustainability and workforce development.
Oxfordshire's best and worst rated doctor's surgeries, as decided by people across the county, have been revealed in the annual GP patient survey. This year's results show that 75% of patients reported a good overall experience of their GP practice. 70% also had a good overall experience of contacting their GP practice. Patients are asked a variety of questions about their GP, the practice, and the service that comes with it. Questions range from how helpful the receptionist is to the ease of contacting the service over the phone, as well as the overall experience. The best surgery in Oxfordshire is the Wychwood Health Centre in Shipton-under-Wychwood, where 96.51% of patients scored the surgery as good and very good. This was followed by Beaconsfield Health Centre in Wallingford, 96.38%, and Luther Street Medical Practice in Oxford, 95.11%. The worst practice, as voted for by its patients, is Montgomery House Surgery in Bicester, where 24.19% of respondents rated the practice as poor and very poor in the survey. This was followed by the Lees Health Centre in Blackbird Lees, Oxford, 20.66%, and St Bartholomew's and Holloway Medical Centre in Cowley at 20.06%. Louise Ansari, Chief Executive of Healthwatch England, said primary care delivers 90% of the interactions people have with the NHS. With public satisfaction in the NHS declining, improvements to how people access care from their GP, pharmacy, dentistry and other primary care teams is vital. It's promising that this year's findings show modest increases in people's overall experience of GP, including an increase in the number of people given a choice of time, day or location for their most recent appointment, which we know from previous year's results directly links to improvements in overall experience. However, our recent research shows there is a gap between the choices people want and the ones they get. Dr. Amanda Doyle, NHS England's National Director for Primary Care and Community Services, added, "The results reflect patients now being able to use the NHS app for more services, better phone systems to easily book an appointment, and the hard work of our general practice teams, but there is still more to do to improve patients' satisfaction and experience."
A health food shop has opened at a shopping centre. Grape Tree has opened its 178th food store at the Orchard Centre, Didcot, offering health foods and well-being products in bulk. It comes as the budget health brand continues a fast-growing expansion, with 60 new stores opened since the beginning of 2024. Founder Nick Schutt said, "It's great to have opened our 178th store at the Orchard Centre in Didcot. Our range of whole foods and health supplements will be a great addition to the centre, and we're confident shoppers will love what we've got to offer." It's the third store to open in Oxfordshire, with one Grape Tree already in Whitney High Street and another in Castle Street, Banbury. The products on offer include snacks like nuts, seeds and fruits, and ingredients including organic, natural and protein ranges, beauty products, vitamins and supplements. A spokesperson for the Orchard Centre welcomed the newest store to the shopping centre. They said, "We're delighted to announce that Grape Tree have opened in Orchard Didcot. Pop in for wholesome snacks, natural ingredients, vitamins, whole foods and more. Perfect for a health boost or guilt-free nibble." The fast-expanding business, which was founded by Mr. Schutz in 2013 after selling his previous wellness brand, Julian Graves, to parent company Holland & Barrett, is continuing its series of soft launches under the radar in high streets and market towns across the UK.
A huge operation has been completed to remove a giant fatberg the size of a blue whale from a large sewer in Oxford. Thames Water said the 120-ton build-up of fat and grease stretched for more than 1 kilometre through one of the sewers in Oxford and took weeks to remove. Multiple teams across the company and its contractors joined forces to remove the congealed fat, oil, grease and wipes from the pipe located 20 metres underground. Complexity was added to the operation due to the pipe's size and its depth under the ground, as well as high levels of gas elevated by the fatberg and the need to keep Oxford's wastewater flowing. Special permits were achieved and the build-up gases were vented before waiting for the right dry weather conditions to enter the sewer and complete the work. Every year, Thames Water clears 75,000 blockages from its sewer network at a cost of £18 million, with 60% of sewer flooding incidents caused by sewer abuse. The company's Bin It, Don't Block It campaign encourages customers to flush only the three P's down the toilet: pee, poo and paper. Ms. Whitmore added, "This is a powerful reminder of why it's so important to only flush the three P's down the toilet so we can continue to keep our sewers flowing and reduce the risk of flooding, blockages and pollutions." To date this year, the water company has cleared 35,178 blockages due to sewer abuse, including more than 23,000 blockages caused by wet wipes and more than 11,000 caused by fat, oil and grease blockages. A total of 518 incidents were described as third-party blockages in which other items and substances, like concrete, blocked the sewers.
Valid concerns are being reviewed regarding a survey exploring whether the growing village of Kidlington should be officially listed as a town. The questionnaire from Kidlington Parish Council looks into whether local people want to adopt town status. It comes as the village has been earmarked for housing development and Oxford United's proposed new stadium at the Triangle, which has raised fears over homes being earmarked on Greenbelt land. Some locals believe the so-called Kidlington Gap, which separates Oxford from the village, will be swallowed up. The questions within the survey include, do you feel we should become a town, given the benefits it could provide and the local services and infrastructure required? And what would you consider the most important reason for becoming a town council? In a statement, the parish council said it would like to respond to comments regarding the community engagement on whether the council should change its status to become a town council. A spokesperson said, "Some valid concerns have been raised about the structure of specific questions, and we are reviewing the responses with full transparency and fairness. We assure the public that no data collected will be used to justify a change without wider community dialogue and democratic accountability." Since its release, the survey has caused some debate, with the head of the Oxfordshire Greens, Ian Middleton, saying that, paradoxically, taking on the new status could help the area resist becoming a suburb of Oxford. The parish council has also set out some benefits to the move, as it raises the issue now in the context of large development in the area and local government reorganisation being explored across the county. In its latest statement, the council said, "In any such reorganisation, larger unitary authorities will emerge, and smaller parish councils could be at risk of being absorbed or sidelined. Town council status would provide Kidlington with a stronger identity and more, helping to safeguard local representation and autonomy during any future structural changes. Ensuring that the village retains its status in the face of significant growth from Oxford has been a key issue. Indeed, several developments have been objected to by locals on these grounds, including a 340-home development on land north of the Moors from Carter Jones. We are clear that our residents view themselves as independent of Oxford," said the council, "and this council looks to support those views." The spokesperson added, "This is especially important as Kidlington is recognised as the main service centre for at least five surrounding parishes, and it is already larger than some of the main towns within Oxfordshire." The council again reiterated its desire to hear from local people about the issue. "To be absolutely clear, no decision will be made without engaging with local residents," the spokesperson said.
A pensioner has been left feeling sad after his beloved pet crow was taken away by the police due to poor conditions and released into the wild. Charles Harris of Beachy Avenue, Marsden, Oxford, is 75 years old and has looked after the crow, called simply Crow, since 2002, when he rescued her after she'd been attacked by another bird. Despite being able to open its wings, it was unable to fly due to an injury to its back sustained from the attack. After discussing the situation with a vet, Mr. Harris decided to look after Crow himself. For almost 4 years, she has been his companion. "She's a lovely little bird," he said. "She would come up and cuddle me." He added that she was popular with local youngsters and would often happily run around his home. However, in the last few weeks, police attended Mr. Harry's property and took the bird. A spokesperson for Thames Valley Police said, "We received a report of a wildlife crime at around 8:30 p.m. on Thursday, July the 24th. It was reported that a man was keeping a crow in poor conditions at a property in Beachy Avenue. Officers attended the property and the bird was freed into an open area park. No arrests were made. However, Mr. Harris was confused as to why his beloved pet was taken. It had mites, he said. I was treating it, and I'd had a vet treating it. He said a vet had declared Crow to be in excellent health only a few months before the mites' condition started. I kept her moving and active, he said. Before retirement, Mr. Harris drove a tractor and worked on a farm. Of the infection, he said, initially medicine had been prescribed that cost up to £40 a month, but he stopped giving Crow that at the vet's instruction. He said, I gave her soap and water washes when the mites came back. On the police's action, he said, it was unjustified. They could have just put a note through the door to say take her to the vet again. She won't survive out there, he added. She cannot go back to the wild because she's disabled. The other birds will kill her on sight.
A footballer drowned after getting into difficulty while in the River Thames, an inquest has heard. William Coker was found on July the 13th after he entered the River Thames at Buscott Lock near Farringdon the previous evening. Police launched an extensive search lasting over 12 hours to try and find the 23-year-old. An inquest into his death was opened by His Majesty's Senior Coroner Darren Salter at Oxford Coroner's Court on July the 22nd. The death of Mr. Coker, who was a hotel waiter and resided at Medlar Court, Swindon, was verified by a police officer at 9:40 p.m. on July the 13th. His cause of death following a post-mortem has been given as drowning. The full inquest is set to take place at the same court on October the 23rd at 2 p.m. Mr. Coker played football for both Calne Town FC and Highworth Town FC in Wiltshire. Both clubs have paid tribute to him following his death. A GoFundMe was also set up by Otis Lewis to pay for funeral expenses and support Will's family, which raised more than £4,500 in less than 24 hours. In a public tribute, Highworth Town manager Paul Braithwaite said, "I've known Will now for the past three seasons. He always attended our pre-season sessions since I'd been at the club and pushed himself so hard at every session to try and break into the first team. He played a big part in the reserve team under manager Liam Coombley. And again this season, Will was back in with us, applying himself in his usual hard-working manner with a huge smile on his face. It was only last Saturday he was playing with us, all against his ex-reserve teammates. It's so sad that only 7 days later we received this tragic news." Off the pitch, he described Mr. Coker as polite and respectful. He added, "Will was quiet but super polite and a respectful lad who loved football so much. He won't be forgotten by myself, and as a club, we will be holding a 2-minute silence on Tuesday in our home friendly against Devizes Town. All of us associated with Highworth Town FC would like to send all our love and condolences to Will's family and friends." They added, "We are very sad to announce that Will Coker has passed away over the weekend. Will was a part of our reserve team for the last 5 years. Will loved his football, always had a smile on his face, and was liked for everyone. Our thoughts are with Will's friends and family at this sad time. Will has been taken far too early."
The world has changed much in 5 decades, but wedding dresses remain pretty much untouched in that time, says a Bicester dressmaker and fitter celebrating 50 years. When Ros Andrews, owner of Ros's Alteration Room, started a career with a sewing machine, it was 1975, the year of bishop sleeves, mock necklines and floral lace patterns. "The biggest influencer in wedding dress design," she said, "was Princess Diana in 1981, who wore to her wedding an ivory silk taffeta and antique lace gown. This iconic dress, worn for her wedding to the then Prince Charles, is renowned for its dramatic 25-foot train, puffed sleeves and use of antique lace." Ms. Andrews said, "I really don't think that any wedding dress really goes out of fashion. Celebrity weddings definitely do have an influence on designers. Lace sleeves were a big thing when Kate got married. When Lady Di got married, it was the big puffy sleeve." In 5 decades, Ms. Andrews said she had done countless wedding dresses. "I try and do from March to November. I do between 15 and 20 weddings a month," Ms. Andrews said. "Over 50 years, that's quite a few." She left school aged 15 and went straight into work at a tailor shop on an American Air Force base before joining Henry's in Bicester. She claims Bicester Village gave her business a big boost when it opened in the late 1990s. To celebrate 50 years in the business, she lined up wedding dresses she has worked on through the years outside her shop. But what has she enjoyed most of all in 50 years of wedding dress designing? "I just enjoy the sewing," Ms. Andrews admitted. "Obviously, weddings are lovely because you're making that bride's dress perfect for her day. And school proms are popular as well." The wedding dress industry in the UK has a significant market, valued at almost £400 million in 2024.
That was the last news item for this week's Ox Talk. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, then please ring Margaret on a new number, 07496 062280, and do please leave your name and contact or phone number so that we can return your call. This edition and previous editions of Ox Talk can be found on our website, oxtalk.org.uk. And you can listen there, or you can download an edition to listen at your leisure. And it's goodbye from me, and I wish you a peaceful week. Goodbye.
Notice to listeners of Oxhawk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxtalk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.